Blog Talk Radio.
Can anybody out there hear my voice? Does anybody out there really care for a missing child?
Good evening and welcome to Voices for Justice. I'm your host, Michelle Bart, and tonight we speak with Raven Furlong's family. The call-in number is 917-932-8962. We're also taking questions in the chat room this evening. Log on to blogtalkradio.com/NWCAVE and click tonight's show. Tonight's show is to allow this distraught family to be open about the hell that they have been through since February 5th. It's also a time that gives them the ability to be open and honest about the case that they know without editing anything that they have to say. So for any of those in the media that have been calling us all day wanting to interview the family, please contact us at NW Cave at 360-852-8019 or at press at nwcave.org following the cast of our show. On April 5th, 2 months to the day, I may add, on April 5th, Raven left her house and was located again 2 months later in Venice, California. Here is one of the reports that give you an idea of what transpired this weekend. This aired in Denver. And we're going to play for you right now.
Information now on a missing Aurora teen found last night in Venice, California. Raven Furlong had been missing for more than a month. Tonight, Raven Furlong's mom speaking exclusively with 7 News, saying her daughter isn't a victim, is a victim, not a runaway. The now 18-year-old was reported missing when she didn't come home from school. 7 News reporter Molly Hendrickson following this story. And Molly, Raven's mom says she's not giving up.
And that's because she says she believes she's been forced into the dark world of sex trafficking. Now, last night, the teenager told police that she was okay. She was there on her own free will, but her mother isn't buying it.
For more than 6 weeks, this is all Tanya Mahaffey has had of her daughter.
She's such a happy, spunky, outgoing, intelligent girl.
Images that have both given her hope and broken her heart.
You know, I can tell that it's her, but that's not my daughter.
Police believe she's a runaway. She even told them she was in California on her own free will.
That's what she's been told to say. She would say it.
But her mother believes she's been forced into the dark world of sex trafficking. Her fears confirmed, she says, after another victim came forward.
For her to say, you know, this is what I went through, these are the people who held me, this is their MO, this is what they're doing.
Raven was one of 3 missing Colorado teens with a profile on the website modelmayhem.com. We checked, the site, given an F by the Better Business Bureau, is also facing a lawsuit after a model says she was drugged and raped by 2 men. The lawsuit alleges ModelMayhem.com knew they mined the site looking for victims. And earlier this month, this woman telling 7 News she was sexually abused after posting on the site.
I went willingly to what I thought was a job in Arizona, and then when I was there, I was held against my will to have sex.
A story that both chills Raven's mother and fuels her to fight for her daughter's life.
We keep searching, we keep looking. And if we find her, we bring her home. I'm not giving up.
And police have taken the teenager off their missing persons list. Meanwhile, the family continues to post to her Facebook page. They're even appearing on a talk radio show asking Raven to call in. Reporting live, Molly Hendrickson, 7 News.
Information now on a missing Aurora teen found last night in Venice, California. Raven Furlong had...
We want to take it over to Dr. Shelley Schaefer, who's the director of NWK's Missing Person Division, to give us a little bit of a background, Shelley, before we send it over to the parents. Can you tell us a little bit about the case and why you and your team feel that this may be a trafficking situation?
Well, we know that Raven left home, but we also know that she left home with 2 people, and one of those persons is an adult. We believe she was persuaded to leave home. We know that she had photographs taken with a photographer, and we have found out that that photographer in the Denver area is indeed have a connection with Model Mayhem. After this weekend, it became obvious to everyone that had contact, all the family members that had contact with Raven, that that was not the Raven she knew. Oftentimes, human trafficking victims are told what to say, and her speech was canned because another young woman that had called home said the exact same thing to her father that Raven said to her father. There was a lot of mix-ups with the Pacific Division of LAPD, whether right or wrong. I don't feel comfortable getting into that right now. However, you know, the family is still suffering, and they suffer even more after this weekend when she was 5 feet or even less away from her aunt, and her aunt couldn't get to her. When she saw her aunt, there was a sigh of relief, and her body language, Raven's body language, showed that she was relieved to see her aunt. Yet once she got to the police department, it had all changed. And that's usually how human trafficking victims are taught to react once they're picked up by the police. The police had...
Now, when you're saying that the Raven, while under with the police in the Pacific Division of the LAPD this past weekend, what we know is that she was located by a reporter, from what I understand, who texts the mother in regards to if that was her daughter or not. And when Tanya agreed, Tanya is the mom, agreed that it was her daughter, it came to our attention later that because of individuals around Raven, this reporter decided to phone the police, and they took her in. When they took her in, everybody was blogging and tweeting and on another website in regards to that Raven had spoken to her stepmom. And that's when we got Mark, and I'm going to bring on Mark and Tanya in 1 minute, when Mark and his wife, Lynn, Mark is the dad, actually then got on the horn with police and said, "We haven't spoken to her since February 26th. Is that not correct, Shelley?
Yes, that is correct. Raven did say some mistruths in the interview with the police. Probably everything she said with the police was a canned speech. And by that's what human traffickers teach their victims to say and to do when they are picked up by police.
So let's go to Mark and Tanya. Mark, are you on the line?
I am.
So when we were contacted by someone down in L.A. indicating to us that they were hearing that your daughter had been speaking to your wife, Lynn, her stepmother, and we called to ask you if that was true, and you said definitely not. We hadn't spoken to her since February 26th. You all got on the phone with the police. Can you kind of review for our listeners what all of that transpired and what took place with how the conversation with your daughter went for the first time? You haven't seen or heard from her since she went missing. Lynn heard from her on February 26th for a brief second, but as her father, how are you feeling?
Pretty let down, that's for sure. I was on the phone with you guys, and Lynn was making the calls to the police. And you know, the police said that they contacted us. Well, that's totally not true, because we had to call them. If you'll remember, you were begging us to call them right now, and how your sense of urgency was tremendous. The police believed everything she said. and they were getting ready to let her go. It seems like we barely caught her before they took her out the door. My question to them was, can you please hold her for a little while so that we can figure this out? For instance, like, how come she isn't no longer in trouble for the first charges, the reason she was arrested? Why have those charges gone away? And also, why would she not be charged for falsifying police information? And can you please answer this for me? Also, they were just, I don't know, were they so embarrassed that they just dropped every single charge they ever gave to her and just let her go because they were so embarrassed? I don't know. I felt like they were doing nothing to help us. Actually, at the time when Lynn was talking to my daughter, I didn't even know it because our conversation over the speakerphone was kind of stressed, so she had to come upstairs to get some peace and quiet so she could talk to Raven. And she was actually losing hold of her. Raven was getting ready to say, you know, look, I'm done with this. She said, I don't have to be here. I don't even have to talk to you guys. I'm here on my own. I'm doing this for you guys. And we're like, well, what do you mean? You know, we haven't heard anything from you. Who are you with? What are you doing? And she told me she was with people that love her and she's safe. And I said, well, I heard you're hanging out with some Crips. And since when have you ever hung out with people like that? And she said, the last time, I said, so how do I get a hold of you when I think of you? How can I reach you? She said, the last time you, she brought up something that happened a year ago when I was mad at her boyfriend. And I threatened, I believe I said, I want to put a burning slug between this punk's eyes. But I didn't mean it. I was mad at this kid. So now she's pulling that back out a year later, saying that that's why she won't tell me where she is. It's so fake. We weren't even, there was no argument with us. There's no reason why she would be so mean. She was very, very mean to me on the phone for the little tiny bit of time that we spent together. And she did say, I love you. And then she became really nasty. And I don't want to waste your time by rambling on. I could do this all night. I didn't get to talk to her for very long. She just stated that she was okay. She didn't have to even talk to me. And I said, well, why didn't you even call on your birthday? She said, I didn't have to. She said, I left you a message.
Have to. And I want to go back to that because have to. When we first took on this case, when your family came to us, we did a soft approach. In our estimate, if she was truly a runaway, we did not want to, you know, put a bunch of photos and information about her life out there in the media. And so we did a soft approach for 48 hours. And when we gave her a deadline of 6 o'clock on February 26th to call us, she called 5 minutes to 6 to your wife, and that's exactly what she told Lynn back then. I was told I had to call you. I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm surrounded by people that love me. I gotta go. I'm not on my phone. To me, that doesn't sound like a loving daughter calling her mother. And that same canned speech, as Shelley stated in the intro, was the same similar kind of demeanor, if you will, in addition to how you felt when we talked to you after you spoke with Raven this past Friday, was the same way Alyssa spoke with her father, who did not even know she had been missing for 30 days. And when he finally got a hold of her, that's how we're surrounded by people that love us. That to us in this industry is called a canned speech, and that is what they're trained or brainwashed, however you want to word it, that these girls are taught in order, if they get caught, what they're to say and where they're supposed to meet somebody after they're released. And it's disturbing. It's very disturbing that these girls all come from loving families, and yet she told you exactly what she needed to say in front of the police, and the police bought into it, and that's the sad state. Tanya, you yeah. also, you received the call as well. Your sister had spent 2.5 weeks in Southern California. She was at the police department. They, in fact, told her you know, get over to the police department. We'll let you see your niece. And she waited there for 2 hours only to be told that they took her out the back and drove her away. You did not know any of this because you were overwhelmed, fell asleep, woke up at 2 a.m. to only find that they released your daughter once again. How does that make a mother feel?
Like every organ I have is being ripped out of my stomach. The disappointment and the heartbreak and just how sickened I am, it's just, I can't put it into words. My sister was there, and we had her there because we knew Raven's general location, and we knew she was still in trouble. We knew she had not been in possession of her vehicle, despite what the LAPD insists. We knew that she was in trouble, and we just wanted to have a chance for Raven to have that opportunity to leave. When she called me, I said, just come home with your aunt for 2 days. If Venice is really where you want to be, I will put you on a bus or a plane right back out there. Just prove to me that you can leave and that you're safe. And she said, I'm not leaving California. And that was essentially the extent of our conversation. I begged her to come home, even if just for 2 days, to give her family the peace and resolve so that we can truly know she's safe and leave her be. Because she is 18 at this point. If this is what she wants to do, she can do it. But when I have an officer telling me, well, she doesn't appear to be in any immediate danger, and she's told us all the right things, so I have no reason to hold her. Yes, you do. You've got these other criminal charges. You've got lying to a police officer. You've got her own welfare reason to hold her. Everything, there's so many reasons. They just wanted to wash their hands of her and be done, and that's what they did. And for a police officer to drive her back to where they picked her up and release her is just amazing to me. I cannot understand. I can't wrap my head around that.
What your sister, her aunt, also stated that when Raven saw her at the beach and then saw her in the police department in the lobby, she said, from head to toe, Michelle, that girl looked so relieved. My niece was so happy to see me. And then to come out and tell me she didn't want to see me, and 2 hours later they took her through a different exit than that anybody else being discharged from that police department that walked right by Toby. You know, they all came out through the front, but yet they took Raven out like she was a celebrity or something. You know, the Charlie Sheens of the world would be escorted out the back door. So why do you think that they would not let Toby even speak to her? Or better yet, we know of two advocates in human trafficking and runaway that would had offered their time to come down there and speak to your daughter, and that didn't happen either.
No, they didn't. The LAPD has done so many things wrong in this. Number one, first and foremost, they never processed the car. They said, we have no reason to believe she is in immediate danger. If they had processed my car and had gone through my car, they would have every reason they need. They would see that the seat was adjusted for somebody much taller than myself or Raven. They would see the pre-programmed radio stations were not music my daughter listened to. They would see that she didn't have the keys on her. The person she was arrested with had the keys in their property when they were booked into jail, and that's why Raven never returned to the car. I've got parking tickets daily from the day they were arrested until I recovered the car. And so the fact is Raven didn't have the opportunity to return to the car because she didn't have the keys. They were in inmate property with the man she was arrested with. They never saw the stuff, the paperwork that belonged to an adult black male in my vehicle. They never saw the used condoms or the 1 gallon Ziploc bag full of condoms and lube. Who carries that around? Nobody.
Wait a second. Let me interrupt you for a minute, Tanya. Are you saying then that the vehicle, which we know that the family found and located, and you called police with the address and said, I'm on my way, my husband and I are flying out right now, basically just handed over the vehicle to you when you got there and had never processed the car?
I got there and I had keys for the vehicle, but I didn't enter it right away. I watched the vehicle for several hours. As a matter of fact, we got there at 1 a.m. We watched the vehicle till almost noon. I was up for, I think I told you, 42 hours straight, and I was not going to go to sleep. I watched every person, everything that came by there. And, no, the police never processed it. I finally moved it so it wouldn't get yet another ticket. You have no idea. I've probably got $1,000 between parking tickets and toll booth violations, something my daughter would never do to me. And that I'm contesting all of them, of course, but it is absolutely obvious that she was not the person that was in possession of that vehicle, yet I have the detective from LAPD telling me there's nothing that they can charge this man with. I'm like, what about receiving stolen property? That's a crime, and we can prove he was in the vehicle after the most recent day. Anyone in my family spoke to my daughter. The seats adjusted for somebody much larger than myself or Raven. We never have to adjust the seats when we get in the vehicles after each other. It's like it's all of his property was in there. And come to find out, I found my daughter's SIM card in the car. She had
from
told
the
me
cell
that,
phone?
Yes, from the cell phone, her brand-new iPhone 4 that she had that hadn't been used. The SIM card was in the car, and that tells me somebody got rid of the phone. So she had no way to contact anyone. Like I said, there was food in the car my daughter would never eat. She would never leave her ID voluntarily behind, as well as her jewelry. I mean, she cared enough to save it all in her wallet, but her eyeglasses, she would not
her
leave.
Her eyeglasses, I mean, she wears contacts,
as,
doesn't she?
Well, she left her contacts here, but yes, she wears
right.
contacts or eyeglasses. And my daughter, I mean, as much as I hate to say it, and you can see from all of the photos that I have of her previous to her going to California, she's a very much a, I don't want to say vain person, but she loves dressing up, being pretty, things like that. And so to look at her now, these pictures that I see, they're just not my daughter. And
doesn't look like Raven, does it?
No, I mean, it's her physically, but it's just not my daughter.
Now, when you state the SIM card, I want to back up a little bit. Shelley, in regards to what we know of the case, on the 26th, when Raven phoned home and spoke with Lynn and said, you know, I was told to call you, and Lynn said, where's your phone? Because Raven kept on saying,
so
I got to go, I got to go, this isn't my phone. And she said, where's your phone? And she goes, I lost it. Well, from your law enforcement background, Shelley, wouldn't that imply that if she lost her phone, the SIM card would be with the phone?
I would think that the SIM card would be with the phone. Now, a phone can make calls without the SIM card. The SIM card records what the phone is doing. My concern with what Tanya was just saying is that the car was reported stolen. And if the car was reported stolen, there was an APB put out on the car. Now, why did the car continually get tickets? The only answer for that is because nobody ever looked into the license plate on the car to realize
nope.
it was stolen, which is
and
the
not
first
just tickets.
Right,
fast track violations on the Bay Bridge and things as well.
Right. And at that point, that, you know, I can't speak poorly of the LAPD, but at that point, you have to wonder, were they really looking for this car? Were they just out to get tickets? What were they doing? Because once you find that car, even after the mom found the car, Tanya, even after she found the car should have been impounded and processed for evidence. It never was. And I do recall seeing on the media that there's one police officer, I don't know who he was, but he said that the police found the car. Well, that's not accurate. And
that isn't accurate at all.
Shelley, I begged them. I begged the LAPD to take the evidence out of my car. I begged the FBI to take the evidence out of my car. I begged them. I said, please, you have to see this. There's, as a matter of fact, there's a partial debit card that was in the vehicle that belonged to the witness whose mom contacted me via Facebook. And I had never seen her or spoken to her before. She's describing clothing that this black male always wore, and it's in my car. And they never, to all this legal paperwork, they never wanted anything out of my car. And the instant I took possession of the car, it can no longer be used as evidence. And it is just the debauchery, just the debacle. I mean, on the LAPD side, what they did not do, weeks after they had Raven's flyer, they booked her in and released her because they didn't want to seek medical care. They didn't verify her identity. Weeks after they had her flyer, she's getting tickets. The vehicle is getting tickets every day, and it's not coming up.
Stolen.
Well,
is,
they arrested her, Mark. They arrested her, did they not, on March 10th? I mean, her mugshot shows blood. How does that make you, you know, what do you say about that, Mark, as a father, knowing your daughter was reported missing? You all did the right thing, and yet a victim can walk in, get arrested for one thing, and give them false information, and they can't say that this is your daughter?
It was very sad to hear that, and, you know, Raven's sitting here saying that she's all safe and everything, but here she is thousands of miles away from home with complete strangers. And I want to reinterject about the car thing. When Raven talked to Tanya on the 26th or whatever date that was, she didn't even know that Tanya had the car. She hadn't seen her car, obviously, since before she got arrested. Raven is not... Who's safe if they all of a sudden are missing their phone, their car? She didn't even know her car was gone for weeks.
And her wallet.
Able to run around town on her own with her own car. She's being drove around by thugs.
There was a question in the chat room I was looking at, and why did the police even pick Raven up on that, I think it was last Friday evening, just to release her? What was the point of that? Does anybody know?
They said they were going to question her about giving false information to a police officer. But that's not what happened. They picked her up so they could clear her out of the system and wash their hands of her because they're sick of dealing with me. Because even weeks before I went out to Pacific Division, I was calling them. Michelle was sending flyers over. We were inundating that area based on tips and information we had, and I'm not someone who's going to give up until I know my child's safe. And I promise you, if my daughter came home for 10 minutes and could prove to me she could leave California, come home, prove to me her safety, I would put her back on a plane back to Venice in the next breath if that's what she wanted, because she is 18 and can make that choice. But the fact that she will not do that tells me she is not safe. And they are sick of dealing with me because I have made phone calls at all hours of the night, talked to everybody there. Somehow I got the emergency watch commander's desk line, and I just called them directly. I don't care. This is my child, and they're not taking this seriously.
If I may interject also, that when we came on to this, and after we weren't satisfied with the call she made to Lynn, and we started doing the media, I'll tell you, you know, the J.C. Dugards, the Elizabeth Smarts, the Sean Hornbecks, those kids were found because of the media. And this is a prime example of a family that most families wish they have heard. Kara Nichols' mom wishes she's heard from Kara. So in your case, you have had her laptop, all of her phone logs, her emails, all of that, and the police never wanted that stuff, even despite the fact that there's communication between your daughter and grown men asking for sexual favors, knowing she was under 18. They never dumped her computer. They never looked at any of that stuff, tagged her as a runaway. And if it wasn't for the media in Colorado and across this country, I can tell you the tips that we have received since February, yes, we can confidently say at this point from Shelley's team, our private investigators, everyone, that without a doubt this young lady is not just hanging out in Venice, California, enjoying the California sunshine. And why do we know this?
Because
we followed the trail. which no police department has done thus far except for San Bernardino Police. We give a shout out to them because Detective, I think he's a detective, or Sergeant O'Brien, and his team out there believed that a tip came in and believed that they had seen Raven in San Bernardino at a convenience store, went out there, pulled the videotape. Wow, that's a concept in the 21st century. Pulled the videotape and followed the lead. And because we could not review the videotape, you and your husband went down there and said, "I'm so upset it's not Raven." Obviously, it was two girls who most likely were in some kind of trouble, but that police department did exactly what so far LAPD and Aurora Police have not for you. Is that correct?
Yes, and I will tell you how amazed I was with Sergeant O'Brien, because he came in on his day off because they were having problems with their equipment, so he couldn't email me the video. He came in on his day off to show me the video, and he had already done research. Based on the hubcaps that you could see in the video, he had figured out the three different kinds of cars that it could possibly be on, and he was following up and had more information about this one tip than any other department has had collectively. He was working hard for Raven, and sadly, it was not my daughter, but it was something we had to follow up. And I'm just amazed that there are still good law enforcement agencies or officers out there. After what I've been through recently, it's just really hard for me to put my faith in the people who we pay to serve and protect us when I know what my family has had to deal with. What Raven's family has had to deal with, not just my family, but she has two very loving families, and we are all very worried about her, and for her to contact nobody, including her cousins, who she always stays in contact with, is just unheard of. It is absolutely unheard of.
What's unheard of is, for any of the media listening, to get emails and phone conversations with law enforcement officers in two jurisdictions to tell us to stop doing media, that it's snowballed out of control, that it's spiraled out of control, and it's basically mom's fault for doing the media. We say thank you to the media, because without the media, this family would be like most families who never hear from their child and not know the truth of what's happening to their child. And we have an idea. Now we're demanding action from some authority much greater than these two law enforcement agencies, because at this point they had every ample opportunity of rescuing this girl, reuniting her with her family, and then letting her family decide if she wanted to go back to Venice, let her. But the canned speech, you know, they can can it there, because we don't believe it. Shelley, what else do you have in regards to, you know, your team and what we're looking at as far as maybe Alyssa? Do we know where Alyssa or Olivia Redden are?
We don't believe they're with Raven any longer. We have heard that Olivia has left the area with a boyfriend. Alyssa, we're
quote
not
unquote
sure.
Quote-unquote boyfriend.
I'm sorry?
Quote-unquote boyfriend.
Yes, quote-unquote boyfriend. We have, Alyssa has not been on our grid. I still have her phone number, and she doesn't answer at all. It just says it doesn't take any calls, so it may have been disconnected. However, their families have never retained us to help in any such way, but they have not been spotted with Raven. There's a lot of places to go from here. I'm getting tips daily and more tips as to possible improprieties that have occurred, and with that, I'm not implying the LAPD. There are other improprieties that have occurred outside of the police department. We have made several connections in the last, actually today, and it started last night, and we've made more connections with people that are in higher positions than the Pacific Station of the LAPD and the Aurora Police Department. So we're taking it to the next level. We are not giving up. we are getting Raven home. We, and I think I can speak for Michelle as well, as my missing persons team, we don't think Raven is okay. We don't think she's fine, as was reported on one news station called, I think, RMG or something. We don't think that's the case at all. And we have tips on other people to examine and to look at, and we think that if we can narrow it down a bit further, which we are doing, we will not only find Raven, but we will find the other girls as well. And this is just, it's what the police department and their roadblocks is just despicable, and it's a travesty to even think that they're here to serve and to protect when
and
they have other agendas.
And the notion that she ran away, let's backtrack to February 5th. We have never disputed the fact that, yes, Tanya and Mark's daughter left her home at 8 o'clock in the morning, bound for school, and somewhere along the line hooked up with Olivia and Alyssa Redden, and somehow or another ended up at a pawn shop where the two girls pawned guitars and did their thing. And at that time, Raven still seemed, you know, happy-go-lucky, but she did text her mother and told her, "I'm not running away. I love you. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I just need a couple days. We're going up to Alyssa's sister's cabin." Well, 2 days later, she's still not back. But the ironic part of it all is when she left the house, she didn't bring her computer, which if she was running away, she'd take with her. She didn't take all her clothes. If she was running away, she'd take all her clothes and makeup and most of all, her contact lenses and solution. And so to think she's a runaway and then fast forward to finding her a couple times now in the Venice Beach area, and knowing that that vehicle, we don't know if Raven has been in that vehicle, but we know that that vehicle continues to go up and down the 5 corridor constantly through Bakersfield, Stockton, Berkeley, San Francisco, and back down to Venice. And that is a constant, constant road trip for whomever was driving this vehicle. And yet... Yes, go ahead.
To interrupt. What I also found interesting was that Raven had spoke to, and family, you can correct me if it's, I know her name is Cassidy. I don't know if she's a cousin or
right.
Or what exact relationship is, but I do know that Cassidy would like to speak and say some things about her missing, they lived together for a long time. So her missing cousin or whatever the relationship is, if that would be okay with you. I know Cassidy wants to say some things, and maybe Raven's listening, maybe not, but I think...
We hope Raven is listening. The call-in number for anyone that has questions for Mark or Tanya is 917-932-8962. Somebody from the Orange County area of California has called in recently and hung up. If that's you, Raven, we want to hear your side of it. Call us. Let us hear your voice.
So can
go ahead, Cassidy.
Okay, so I'm Cassidy. I am Raven's cousin. I moved in with Lynn and Mark about a year and a half ago, maybe a little bit more. I moved in and I lived with Raven for a little bit over a year. I was named after Raven. And I've known Raven my whole life. Raven is... like a sister. And, okay, one of the weird things that I noticed is on Friday, when I spoke to her, she kept calling me sweetie. She never called me sweetie, not once, when she lived here. That's one thing that struck me odd. Another thing was Raven didn't just run away, because she promised at the beginning of the year that she would make it to my door wrap-up. And my door is one of my projects in my school. But, she didn't make it to that, one. And two, if she didn't call her parents, she would have called me. She would have. If she was okay and she was safe, Raven would have called me. Raven can tell me anything, you know, and I can tell Raven anything, and I trust Raven. And I trust that she would have called me if she was safe. And when I talked to her the other night, she did not sound like herself, and she just isn't all right. And I know that she's not all right because she didn't call me. And when she left to go to school, she didn't even come to school. I go to her school. You know, I talk to her advisor every day. And I know that she called Dana and said that she was fine, but even Dana thought that it sounded weird. It just, all in all, does not sound like Raven. None of it sounds like Raven. None of it adds up together. And Raven didn't sound right. She didn't sound right, and I know she didn't sound right, and I don't think she's okay. And last week...
Cassidy, how old are you?
I'm 14.
So teens know teens, don't they?
Right, yeah, absolutely. I know Raven, and she knows me, you know? I know who she is. We told each other everything. Like, literally, she was, I don't know how to explain it. She was like my sister. And
she is like your sister.
And last week, my friend, Faith, talked to Alyssa for about 2 hours at school. And Alyssa said that she was fine and she was safe and she was with people who loved her, and her sister ran off with some boy and she was living on her own. And Alyssa's 16. I know Alyssa as well. She's one of my friends. I know who she is. I know that when they first left, it was for for Alyssa's 16th birthday. Turns out that was longer. Raven wouldn't have just left. She didn't even say goodbye. She wouldn't have just left without saying goodbye to me. She wouldn't have. I know she wouldn't have, because I know that she loves us, and I don't think she's okay.
Thank you, Cassidy.
Welcome.
Thanks, Cass.
Is Lynn
right
there, too?
She wouldn't have just left.
Let's take a short break and listen to another soundbite of when the vehicle was located and what they went through. This is actually what sparked the witness coming forward to tell us what we had believed all along. This confirmed it.
A missing Colorado teen and the California modeling website. Is there a connection? The 17-year-old drove away from her home in Aurora, Colorado. Her car turned up here, and now her desperate mother is talking first to Fox 11. Susan Hirsuna with the story. Susan.
February 5th, that's when she was last seen. 17-year-old Raven Furlong, she packed some clothes and makeup. She sent one text message that day, promised to return. That was weeks ago now. In the family search for Raven, they discovered she had a profile on modelmayhem.com. That's the same website connected to two other missing females.
My greatest concern, a lot of those people on there, they're not professional photographers. They don't pay you. They don't ask if you have a portfolio. They want you to provide them photographs for their portfolio and do it free of charge, and they'll give you photographs. So it's not even like a fee-based situation.
Well, I called Model Mayhem's parent company in El Segundo, but got no response. Raven's mom can't say for sure if the website has anything to do with her disappearance or just put some wild thoughts in her head. Meantime, she's hopeful now that they've recovered her car that maybe they're a step closer to finding her. She and Raven's stepfather spent the day watching the car, then talking to everyone in Venice, showing them this picture. They're also looking for this girl, Alyssa Redden. She and Raven left Colorado together. Alyssa has been in contact with her family but hasn't been forthcoming about Raven's whereabouts. And now her mom is left thinking the worst.
Half of runaways who hit the streets within 48 hours are picked up by a pimp or some sort of person who will traffic them. And so it is definitely a concern of mine because she's been gone for 6 weeks now. She's had no contact with her family. She's, even though there's traces, there's the car here, there's a ticket here, there's been no evidence of Raven.
LAPD found the car thanks to a number of parking tickets from different locations around Venice. Adding to the mystery, Raven's glasses and jewelry still inside, but also a man's hat and shoes and hot dogs, a food Raven never ate. So, take another look at Raven Furlong. Her family insists she had no reason to run away and every reason to be home in Aurora. And here's some incentive for you. There is a $1,000 reward for information leading to her safe return home to Colorado. And if you have a tip for the family, you'll find contact information for them on our website, myfoxla.com.
A missing Colorado teen and the California modeling.
The call-in number again, 917-932-8962. I know that her Aunt Toby should be calling in shortly. In regards to the $1,000 reward, we have received a couple requests for that. That is in process and being investigated before anything is dispersed. The $1,000 reward was not put up by police or Crime Stoppers. It was put up by a family friend who wanted Raven home safely. And although she may have been found, we don't have Raven home right now, and we don't believe she's safe. And we'll continue looking. But Mark, is by any chance, is Lynn there also? Does she want to speak?
Yes, she is here. Here she is.
Lynn is Raven's stepmother. She received a call from Raven back on February 26th, despite the police telling everybody in L.A. that she had been in constant contact with Lynn. That is farthest from the truth. Lynn, can you tell us a little bit about that call back on February 26th that made you feel that you weren't confident to stop looking for your daughter?
She just sounded really scared when I talked to her on the 26th, and Raven is a very she's just an upfront person, and if it was her speaking her own words, it would have been more of, hey, I'm almost 18, there's nothing you can do, back off. But instead she sounded very scared and very shaky, and she couldn't answer any questions and just wanted to get off the phone really fast. She kept saying this isn't her phone, she's got to go. She said, her exact words were, I was told I have to call you by 6 p.m. I'm calling you before 6. I'm safe. I got to go.
And so what was different between February 26th and the call that that the police, because the police kept on saying you had been in contact with her, we had you call the police directly, and then they put Raven on the phone with you. What was that call like compared to the call previously?
This time she sounded a little bit more like herself, I thought, but she sounded like what she was saying, she was trying to appease the police. The words that she used were the same words that everyone seems to use, is that I'm safe, I'm with people that love me, but it wasn't really her speaking them, or at least it didn't appear to be. She did sound more like herself, but she was probably in an area where she was a little more comfortable since she was at the police station, and I don't know where she was when she called me the first time.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point.
This is Shelley, and I was the one that initiated the first call, and that was through Alyssa. I explained to her that we need Raven to call home. I gave her 48 hours, and 5 minutes before the 48 hours was up, she did call home. So at that time, we knew they either had communication or were together. After that, I didn't have much more communication with Alyssa. We got Raven to call in, but...
We got her to call in, but didn't Alyssa also tell you that, and again, this sounds like a canned speech, we're surrounded by people that care for us, and we're done with our families. We hate our families, and we just wanted to leave and kill ourselves?
Yes, Alyssa did say that if they had not left where they were living, Alyssa said for herself she would have committed suicide. And then Alyssa did also tell me that they were separated in Vegas, but we now know that was not true. I think of Alyssa all the time as well, and all the other girls that are going through the same thing, and the families just we can't give up. We have to break this ring. This should not be happening in the United States of America. It shouldn't happen anywhere, but let alone in our free country. This should not be occurring. We hear of this all the time across seas and in third world countries or you know, non-policed countries and things like that. We should not have to go through this with our children, and we should have the backing of the police. And if the police are mad because we're bringing media in, well, that doesn't make sense to me, because are they hiding something? Is that why they don't want media in? Because I certainly don't understand why they would not. No one's bad-mouthing them. We know what the police have done, but I don't even know that we've bad-mouthed them on the show. We know what they've done, but if they really have nothing to hide, why would they pull away when media is called in? It makes no sense. We have to keep media going. We have to keep this story going.
Well, they haven't had a problem speaking to media, because when they speak to media and the gentleman down in California on Friday night stating that the Aurora police have ruled her no longer missing and she is free to live her life. I have never seen a police department do that, and my argument with that particular statement was to a journalist today was, I sit on the advisory council for Take 25 at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. We have thousands of children missing throughout this country. And if you're in that system prior to turning 18 years of age, your information stays in that system until you're found one way or another. And I can't believe, if she is 18, why in the world would we have to continue looking for everyone over 18 then? And I know we do, because we're still looking for another friend, Jamie Grissom, Star Lara's sister. She's been missing since 1971, but was entered into the system because she was a teenager. She's still in there, and she'd be over 50. Why are we still looking for her if she's of age and you're not going to question her and be concerned about her? I don't get that. And I'm frustrated. Because when we're trying to work with police, and that is our position, we try to work with police and not against them. We don't want to impede any investigation whatsoever if it means a positive outcome to bring the child home. And the first thing we always do is introduce ourselves to the investigators on the case. And we have hit dead ends with everyone that's not associated with the case. We have had luck with San Bernardino. We have had luck with individuals in other jurisdictions, with the FBI, the Department of Justice. But the folks that are leading the investigation in regards to Raven Furlong, we have hit dead ends, as well as this family. And that, to me, is just heartbreaking, just heartbreaking. Tanya, you know, you have done so much legwork. I'm hoping your sister calls in, 917-932-8962. It was your sister that found us because of the Cara Nichols situation and Model Mayhem. You have been through this since day one. You made the choice to wait one night, and after not hearing from your daughter, you did what any parent immediately should do, and you filed a missing persons report. Has the police ever been to your house or looked in her room?
They've been to my house. They sat on my couch to take the original runaway report. They took the stolen vehicle report over the phone. They did not look in her room. They didn't even want to go downstairs. They came because I called them, and they did what they had to do, and they left. And, you know, I provided them with phone logs. I provided them with I offered them the laptop. Like I said, I've offered them everything, and they've written her off as a runaway, you know. So they didn't bother to do, you know, until we really started getting in with the media. It sat on somebody's desk. Once we started doing media, at that point, some people
finally contacted me, and they were doing some research, but their conclusion was she appeared to be happy and friendly with the two girls at the pawn shop the same day she left, and so therefore she was voluntarily missing. And that is crazy, because what happens in a span of 2 months is unbelievable.
I don't know if Toby's going to call in before the show is over, but I think that Toby deserves a great deal of praise. She was out there for weeks, and you know, the whole family deserves praise. But since she hadn't called in, and I hope she's listening, and you know, there's many reasons that she may have not made this phone call. It's very emotional. But Toby had done a great job. And if it wasn't for just some circumstances that we were unaware of at the time, maybe we would have had Raven home now. But Toby deserves a lot of kudos. So
she's definitely a dedicated aunt. I mean, she traveled to Southern California and lived in a truck for 2 weeks because she didn't want to stay in a hotel in order if she could see her niece. And it's just so upsetting that she had every ample opportunity to speak with Raven. She was that close to her, and yet it was basically taken away from her. And it was heartbreaking when she called screaming and not knowing what to do. Have you spoken to Toby at all? Tanya, I know you probably have.
Yeah, she was here last night, and I spoke with her several times today, and I'm sure she was just recovering and tired. She drove out on a moment's notice to drive to California, and like you said, she was sleeping in the truck. She walked hundreds upon hundreds of miles. She followed up more leads than I can count. And when she got home, she was just physically and mentally exhausted. She hadn't had a good night's sleep. I'm sure today is just she actually didn't get home until yesterday. So I'm sure today is just, you know, a recovery day for her. She is just wiped out.
And I don't blame her.
I don't blame her either. I mean, you know, it's not like Colorado or the Pacific Northwest. You know, it's sunny California. And as you know, the first 48 hours that you all landed there, I mean, anyone could see that you were totally sunburned on your face from walking around miles and miles looking for your daughter. For those that... you know, you read the comments, and we've advised you to stay away from comments on media listings and stuff, and even on ravenfurlong.org. You know, some people say, leave her alone. She's just an adult. She wants to be left alone. If she's my daughter, tough love. We heard the tough love bit from the witnesses whose daughter... she did not report missing because she was told tough love by her psychologist that said, you've done everything you can, let her be, let her go off with her boyfriend. And then eventually she was being trafficked and her parents didn't even know. So how do you answer a question like that to some of the people out there that's saying, you're just overbearing, you know, you're just, you can't accept the truth that your daughter doesn't want you guys anymore.
Well, you know, to those people, I mean, it infuriates me because they just don't know our family and how loving we are and how much Raven loves her family, first off. But, you know, I try not to respond to those things because I know how angry I will get. But Raven had appropriate boundaries, appropriate curfews. I mean, I work for a pediatrician for umpteen years, and I have a good idea of what's an appropriate 17-year-old boundary. She wasn't held back. She was allowed to do things. Her only focus in life was, I need you to focus on school. That's what's important. That's the foundation of your life. And I provided her a vehicle to do so, which she didn't have to pay for. Like we've all said, she had a laptop. She had a phone. She didn't have any arguments in the household. There was... there was no anger. I could accept if my daughter came to me at 18 and said, Mom, this is just too much pressure. I need a year to go blow things off. I'd be like, I don't agree with your decision, but that's your decision to make. And her father said the same thing. These are your decisions to make. If that's what you want to make, do it. But convince your family that you're fine and you're safe and these are truly your decisions and not somebody else's. And Raven knows she can come to me with anything. She's come to me and she's come to her dad and she's come to her stepmom, all of us with very difficult things to talk about. You know, she knows she can. She knows she could call her cousins, you know, whether it be Adriana or Todd or even Cassidy, and have a conversation with them and not have pressure put on her. And so for the people
or
who are out
any of her
there,
friends.
Right.
She hasn't contacted any of her friends, has she?
I've got her friends asking me if they should go out to California. Maybe if she sees a friend, she'll think about what she's doing. And I'm like, even if you find her, there's only so much you can do. The cops, just you can't do anything. And so, I mean, these people can think what they want. There's always going to be naysayers out there and haters out there. But, you know, trust me, I would much rather my daughter was just being a runaway, turn adult who wants to be rebellious than the alternative. And I grapple with this every day, as you know, Michelle. But the evidence is so overwhelming. And the LAPD says, we don't have the evidence. Well, of course you don't. You didn't process the car. Of course you don't. You didn't actually hold her and do anything other than bring her in and talk to her, and she said she was fine. Even the cops said to me, well, she said all the right things. You didn't evaluate her mental status. They're saying she doesn't look like she's strung out on drugs, but the photos I saw, I'm sorry. I know what my kid looks like. And that,
I concur with that. She did look high in those photos.
Without a doubt. She doesn't look like the young lady that we've been looking for. I can tell you that much. I mean, what was the deal with the blood from March 10th?
When she was arrested on March 10th, as a juvenile, weeks after they had her flyer, apparently while the police officer was putting her in the car, her earring got tore out of the ear. At least this is the story I'm told. So instead of, you know, processing her properly and then seeking medical attention, they drove her to Sentinella Medical Center and released her there so that they would not be responsible for the medical bills. And that's why they released her on a PR bond, and she didn't get processed through the system properly because they didn't want to be financially responsible for her medical bills.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
The fact that they did not do their job because she was injured while in their custody infuriates me, because if they had done their job, my daughter would be home and she could have turned 18 at home and said,
that's
Mom,
right,
this is what I want to do. But that didn't happen. Just like the 7 different parking tickets and the fast track violation, and I still have more coming daily. Never once did the car come up as stolen. Never once. Even though it was reported stolen, it was also reported with an underage runaway, endangered runaway. And never once did it raise a red flag. And so I will tell you, some of the beat cops out there in Venice really seem to care. But as soon as you get yourself into the police station, it's a whole different attitude. And I just think the good law enforcement officials out there don't have the freedom to be good law enforcement officials.
We have a question from a listener from the Colorado area. Caller, you're on the air. Do you have a question? Is this Toby?
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Oh, hi, Toby. Thanks for calling in. For those listening to the show, you'll know that Toby is the aunt of Raven. She was the one that was out there, found Raven at the beach, was told to meet at the police department, showed up, sat there for 2 hours, only to be told that her niece was taken away. Toby, just say what's on your mind. I don't even know what questions to ask anymore, because this is just mind-boggling. And as an aunt that loves her two nieces dearly, I can tell you, I bow to you, because you've done what I would do, and that's why we're not giving up on your niece.
Right, and she's my only niece, and I don't have any nephews, so that makes her all that more important to me. Not to say that having two is any less important, but I was, like Tanya just said, I was there. I witnessed that complete 180 from the substation at the beach to the actual police station, because when I got an instant where they opened the door, and I was about 4 or 5 feet from Raven, and she looked at me, and relief, just not just on her face, over her, all of her body language. She was just, you know, breathe a sigh of relief. I could see it. And she was wanted to talk to me. The police stopped me right there and said, asked me who I was. I said, I'm here for her. And they said, well, you can't talk to her right now. We're going to take her down to the police station and book her in for the false information that she previously gave the police on March 10th. You can meet us there and you can speak with her there. I did go down there. I beat them there. I watched them pull in. I went straight into the lobby area where you wait. And a couple of people were being released from the jail, walked right through the lobby and out that door. And a couple of hours after I was sitting there, they came out and said, Raven does not want to speak with you. But if you stay here, she'll walk out by you, past you. So I waited and I waited and I waited. And about 4 hours after I actually showed up at that police station, the police, I don't know if he's the commissioner or who he was wearing a suit, came out to me and told me, oh, by the way, Raven's gone. I said, what? She's gone? You guys told me that I could speak with her here. You would not allow me to speak with her at the substation. You said I could speak with her here. And then you come out and you tell me that she's gone, that you took her back to where you picked her up from. I was infuriated. I'm actually surprised I didn't get myself arrested. But I tried to leave there, and I couldn't drive because of the state that I was in, and I was just flabbergasted. I saw the huge difference from the substation to the police station. And the officers, there was a couple officers at the police station that pulled me aside trying to talk to me, and they upset me because I knew that they were lying to me. So I walked away from them. There was one police officer that was very helpful, but
the watch commander or somebody at the desk?
Yeah, the guy at the front desk.
So, Shelley, let me ask you, as with law enforcement background, on a Friday night, I'm from Los Angeles, so for me to imagine the LAPD coming out on a call that Raven Furlong has been found and picking her up and taking her in when she wasn't doing anything wrong at this point, and they take her in for lying to cops March 10th, isn't that a little odd for a Friday busy night in California for the cops to just pick somebody up and take them in for lying?
I would think so. I worked in the Miami, Florida area, and on a Friday night, if we got a call, it was by priority, and we were very busy. You can imagine Miami, Florida, probably just as bad as Los Angeles. Maybe LA is a little worse, but if they had arrested her on March 10th and they put a bond on her, who paid the bail money, which is 10%, to get her out? And then why did they pick her up again for false identity when I believe that's a felony, and or lying to police about her identity is a felony? And then they released her right back, and not only released her, they drove her to the area they picked her up. Like, okay, we're sorry, come on, we're going to take you back to where we got you. None of it makes sense to me. I would think the Pacific Division and all of the LAPD would be very busy on a Friday night and wouldn't have time to just come out there and pick her
you
up.
You can't get through to them on the telephone that quickly, I can tell you that
I
much.
I was going to make that point. It's taken up to you and me, Michelle, several times, 45 minutes just to get somebody to answer a phone. That's why when I got the watch commander's emergency desk line, I started using it constantly. And Shelley, with that bond, nobody actually posted it. They released her on a personal recognizance bond for a $20,000 felony charge so that they would not have to be responsible for her medical bills when they took her to the hospital.
Right, but you can't, the police can't do that. You can't, if you have someone, you don't know her identity. She lied about her identity. She lied about her age. You can't just release somebody because you don't want to fix their ear or fix whatever happened to her medically. You can't.
Legally they're not supposed to, but that's what I was told they were done. That's what I was told was done because of those reasons.
Right. I mean, but that's what I'm speaking of is they're not supposed to, and it's just.
What I really
craziness.
Said the police stated that they did not pick her up for a false identity, that they just saw her and knew she was a missing person, so they asked her to come talk to them, and she came willingly. And,
they told
and
me
then,
that they picked her up because they knew she gave false information.
What
and
they told me when I called in was that they just picked her up because they recognized her as a missing person and asked her if she would come talk to
and
them.
I find it ironic, too, from a media standpoint, that we know that NBC and Fox and a couple other networks were out there at the beach when all this went down, and they got Toby, they got the police officer, everything. But it was some blog site, I don't even know, something news or something, that actually got a huge soundbite, a very long soundbite from a police officer, which I haven't recognized. I don't know who he is. And also a gal. And then actually had the camera rolling on Raven. And when I review that over and over again, and this may be all, your opinions, but my opinion is that if I'm running away and now I'm free to live my life and I've just screwed my parents over and the police and everybody else, I would give a moment of time to stand there and give an interview and say, I am fine, and be convincing. To me, she may look and sound well, but she was running from the camera, not trying to stand there and give an interview. So, and it wasn't NBC or Fox or anybody out there at that moment. So my question is, if she's indeed fine and wants to live life, then call in, Raven, 917-932-8962. We have a few more minutes. We'd love to hear from you, Alyssa, or Olivia, because right now you're not convincing to this family or to our organization. And I want to remind folks also about Matrice Richardson. You can go to cbsnews.com and put in her name, Matrice Richardson. She was a young lady, over 18, picked up being not paying a bill at a restaurant or what have you, was brought into the police department, and eventually just at 1 a.m. sent packing with nowhere to go. She didn't have her car. She didn't make a call or what have you. And so check out that case out there in Los Angeles, because I know one of our private investigators worked on that case as well. So
I would also like to give a shout out to Lisa. She was a young woman who called frantic and thought she was crazy that she had seen Raven. And I had to calm her down to even get the story straight. She's young and just was totally flabbergasted. She called the police. She called everybody. She called us.
Spiral out of control, Shelley. I mean,
yes,
have to say that the police officer that wrote that, everything spiraling out of control is because we did not trust any of the police departments to take the information. So every time a tip would come in, whether it was Stockton, Bakersfield, Berkeley, L.A., Colorado, we would have them call NCMEC 1-800-THE-LOST because we would know that the intake form would be filled out. And then to double dip, we had them also phone the police department in the jurisdiction that they saw Raven. And in this particular instance, this young lady, she was watching The Following on Fox on DVR 2 weeks after the initial interview with Fox in regards to the car being found back in March. And in the clip, she didn't fast forward quick enough for the commercial, and saw Raven, and she turned to her boyfriend and said, "I saw her last night at Burger King." So that shows you the power of media, people.
She knew immediately something was wrong. She called 1-800-THE-LOST. She did everything that we had asked her to do, and she was a very nervous young woman. We calmed her down. I did speak to her yesterday because she called on Saturday, and I missed the call. And I don't know if she's listening, but you were very strong, Lisa, and we thank you. And we like to show appreciation for the community that does come together, because that's what it takes. When they say it
Look
takes
at
a
Ben.
Village to, when they say it takes a village to raise a child, it really does, and it's going to take a village to bring the child home. And we're
and
here.
Same goes for the tipster, Ben. I mean, look
oh,
at
yeah.
how much
oh, wow.
in San Bernardino. He went
he
through Facebook. He went through
way.
Every one of our emails, our websites. He called our numbers because
Numerous
he wasn't
ways.
Getting any response from anyone else. He called the police. He called NCMEC. And then he got so mad, he posted comments all over Facebook. And so
that's
called determination.
To where he actually went to meet the police officers at where he saw the girls, and
mm-hmm.
the police called him and said, "Oh, we're not going to show up, but we'll send an officer to check that out later."
Yep.
And
yep.
there was one other thing I wanted to add. When I was at the police station, after they told me that she didn't want to talk to me, I tried to give them a Visa gift card to give to her so that anytime she needed money or something, she could call us or somebody, get us a message somehow, and I could put money on that card from anywhere in the United States for her at any point in time. And they would not do that for me. They didn't even give her a Visa
Bullshit.
Gift card.
How does that make you feel, Mark and Tanya?
Furious. I mean, she wasn't even wearing shoes in all those photos. She's not even wearing shoes. I want to know why they think this is a healthy young woman who's doing this on her own, and if they, you know that she's just hanging out in Venice, why wouldn't they do this? What would it hurt to hand her something and say, "Your aunt says there's money on this card and you can use it"?
Yeah, what would that have hurt?
I have
because...
to say, I begged them, I begged and I pleaded with them to let her walk out the front door and not give her a ride. And when they said that they wouldn't do that, that they promised her a ride, I started questioning, really, because that's not your job. And then I said, fine, then hold her. You have a reason to hold her. She gave you false information. They wouldn't do any of that. They're like, no, she's fine. She's
they
fine.
Just told her to wash their hands.
They could have held her on a 5150 or something, but because the outside, I use this analogy, you know, I have severe rheumatoid arthritis and have many foreign parts put in me, and I look good at times, many times. I look fine, but I'm not always feeling fine, and emotionally I might be a basket case. The same goes for a human trafficking victim. Do you really think that human trafficking victims are walking around all bruised and battered? No, they're not. They're emotionally abused. They're psychologically destroyed. And they will do and say whatever they've been told to say if it means saving their life or, for that matter, their loved ones' lives, which many of the times that's the threat. Say it, I'll kill your parents. Say it, I'll go after your friends. And they believe that. And the fact that Toby... You know, you saw your niece, and she looked like a weight was lifted. And then not to be able to talk with her, I think that's a crime in itself.
And
I also wanted
that,
to...
You know, both California and Colorado have human trafficking task force, yet
mm-hmm.
neither state ever referred me to them. Yet she was not evaluated by anyone from the human trafficking task force at all while she was at the station, even though the police knew that that was a concern.
Right.
It is.
There's too many unanswered questions, and you know, the one advice I can say that was given to us by a detective in another jurisdiction that has nothing to do with the case. He said, "Michelle, you know, these kids today put themselves online and in danger, and when they run into the 405 freeway during rush hour, it's very hard to get them out and safe. So that kind of an analogy has stuck with me because, you know, that is true. And when you do post things online or you get involved with people that may be, that have other hidden agendas, it becomes a thing that, yeah, there's excuses we can use in law enforcement to say, we can't do this, we can't do that, but there are the Amber laws, there are the 5150s, there are so many laws out there in this country right now to help hold on to somebody. And yet, in this case, once again, whatever she had to say to the cops, if anything, we're just taking the cops' words for this at this point, the fact is, she was let go. I know that Shelley wants to say one last thought, and then we'll take it back to the parents. Shelley?
I have to go, and I apologize for having to leave earlier than the show is over, but I want to tell the family, and I want to tell all the listeners, and I want to tell everyone that we will not stop. We will continue, and we will get Raven and probably many other girls home safely. We do not give up. And that being said, my thoughts and, you know, my heart is with all of you. Tanya knows that I'm on Eastern time, and I was up until 2 o'clock in the morning on Friday.
That's late for you.
I mean, we were panicking, we were pacing, we were screaming.
We were excited because we were bringing home Raven. And I'll tell you, that doesn't happen too much when you're looking for a missing child. Not enough.
And that was the first thing I sent her dad. I sent her the photo, and I said, Raven's coming home. And to wake up at 2 a.m. and just find that they had released my daughter and didn't even let my sister talk to her, and drove her away from the station was just
ridiculous,
beyond comprehensible.
But my thoughts are with you, and we will not give up.
Thank you, Shelley.
All right, guys. Bye-bye.
We're coming to an end. I just want to give a shout-out also to the folks that have made a contribution to the Raven Furlong Fund. Those funds are still there, and those funds will be dispersed as the family needs in reference to going back and forth to California and what have you, or when Raven comes home, those funds will be used as she sees fit. But it is to bring her home safely, so we thank everyone that has made a contribution to that. NWCAVE is a nonprofit, and you can find out more about us at nwcave.org. If you want to learn more about human trafficking, the Human Trafficking National Hotline is 1-888-373-7888, and you can also go to gems-girls.org or transitionsglobal.org to find out more information on human trafficking. And as we said in the last show, we can't say enough about Cast LA. They also supported the efforts in the last couple months, and you can find out more about them at castla.org. And I want to give you each the last time here to say, where do we go from here? Anything that's on your mind, you are the parents, and like many people have said in the chat room, no one knows their child better than their parents. And obviously right now, the child that you have spoken to in the last 48 hours, just something's out of sync. Tanya?
Yeah, like I said, I grapple every day with you know, the whole situation, you know, and I know that Raven's entire family is confused and hurting and lost, and it's just unimaginable to think what a parent is going through when a child is missing. And like we've all said, we are so fortunate to have the information that we have, and yet even with that, the police do nothing. The police mm-hmm. do nothing to provide
the parents any sort of relief or follow up on things that they should. And so it's something has to change, because when they're under 18, they're just a runaway, and when they're over 18, they're adult and they can make these decisions. And that's how so many people get lost in the loopholes of this type of life. And we have to do something to change that, so nobody else has to go through this.
Kids today don't run away as often as we used to 40 years ago. I mean, today, kids are lured away. That's a crime. Running away isn't a crime. Being lured away is, with an, especially if you have a hidden agenda. And without a doubt, I believe, we believe that Raven, you know, had a carrot dangled that she felt, oh, this will be fun, let's go. And then when she got there, she got into a web she cannot get out of. Mark, Lynn, any last thoughts?
Go ahead, Kat. Okay. Well, okay, one thing, I'm Cassidy again.
Okay,
but
Cassidy.
One extra thing that I would say about this is, okay, Raven, everybody said that when she got arrested, she was with two large African-American males. And, okay, Raven did not have one African-American friend here in Colorado. She didn't. Edward was years ago, but, like, not recently. But it's just not who she would hang out with. And another thing is, the fact that Raven and Olivia, or Alyssa and Olivia, all split up, it doesn't sound right. It doesn't add up, because I don't think that Raven would put her in the position of having only herself to rely on. Raven always had supports, and she always had somebody there to help her. And now that she's on her own and she has no money, no job, no place to live, doesn't add up. It doesn't.
And Raven, how many teens run away with friends and part ways?
Right. And I understand that, you know. And I also understand that Raven is not street smart. That's just what it comes down to. Like, I'm really scared for her because I'm afraid of her safety. She can't keep herself safe. What woman can? Like, honestly. How many women a year get raped? And Raven is 17 and 18 now, and she can't take care of herself. She can't take care of herself if somebody tried to come and hurt her. What is she going to do, like, to save herself? Nothing. It doesn't sound right. It doesn't add up. And I don't think she's okay, because I feel like if she was okay, she would have called, and she wouldn't have, okay, if she was okay, she wouldn't call me sweetie. Ever. Not ever. Not ever. Ever. And the fact that she called me that repetitively made me feel like, what if she's trying to hint at something and I'm not getting it? What if she's
just
trying
like
to tell
me...
Just
like when she called her mother Tanya to Lynn.
Yeah.
Yep.
It just all doesn't add up. I mean, and nobody, like, really gets what I'm saying half the time. But, you know, like, I just know Raven. I just do. I've known her my whole life. I know who she is, and I know what she does. And I mean, I know her. I know what she would have said to me. And
right.
When I said, I wrapped my door, she said, oh, sweetie, you wrapped your door. That's great. She would have said, oh, I'm sorry that I missed it, because she promised me that she would be there. Okay, she didn't even know. She didn't even remember, is what it felt like, that she didn't even remember me. And she would have if something wasn't wrong. She doesn't treat me like that. I'm not like a child to her, even though I am. You know, it's like she treated me equally. Even though she was always older than me, we both treated each other equally, and we both loved each other equally, and Raven loved us, and she would not just leave without calling. She wouldn't do it. She wouldn't, because she called me last time and left me a voicemail at least, and she hasn't called me. And every time that she has called, she doesn't sound like herself. She's either nervous or scared, or she's hinting at something. That's what I'm getting towards. What if she's hinting towards us that she is not okay and we're not getting it? What if I missed something and I'm not getting it? And because I didn't get it,
something is.
Oh, I.
Totally. Cassidy, are you still there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I, you know, nobody knows your loved ones better than family. And in this particular case, we're faced with a situation that we have to get to the bottom of how do we get your cousin home safe. Because right now, the heartbreaking part of it is law enforcement's not looking.
I feel like they never were, though. Because if she got arrested and we sent them flyers, and even though she used a fake name, okay, duh. If you were looking for her, you would know what her face looks like. Okay, she's had the same color hair since she left. She still looks the same. Not particularly the same, but she's still the same person in the front. Maybe she's not the same person behind those eyes. No, but if they were looking, they would have gotten her home when they arrested her the first time. That's how I knew they weren't looking. Like, it's not their kid, you know? They don't know. They don't care. They don't even have, the officer that we were talking to didn't even have kids. He has no idea. I don't even have kids, but I know what it's like, how it affects people. And they don't care because it's not their problem. Guaranteed, if Toby was a cop out there right now, Raven would have been home 4 weeks ago.
Right? Who knows Toby again?
Seriously. Toby has tried. The fact that the government isn't trying really irritates me. And I don't even know anything about the government. I don't. Okay? But I do know that their job is to help you, not to sit around and lie to you. That's not fair. That's not cool. And the fact that they would drive Raven back to the beach doesn't sound right. My mother's been arrested so many times in front of me, and they never drove her back home. She had to figure her way back every time. Why was Raven so special? That just makes me think, you know, like, if there's nothing going on Venice Beach or in California or whatever, no sexual trafficking, no missing people, what would their job be? You know, what would they have to do? Why would they get paid? Like, it
good
all
point.
Just ties in together. Nothing sounds right. And I personally feel like they're in it. They're letting us down, and I'm extremely disappointed, and I feel like we don't have to pay them this year. That's what I feel like.
Good point.
And that's so true. And she's... Cassidy's just very, obviously, outspoken and brave herself. And that's just kind of the person Raven is. You know, she's so outspoken and brave, and she's not going to hold back her thoughts for you. And that's why when she's made these phone calls and she seems panicked and, you know, it's just not her. And that's the one thing that sticks with me. That, and as I told you, Michelle, the 1 gallon bag of condoms and individual lube packets in my car that I found, that of course the police wanted nothing to do with, that just keeps coming back to me. Nobody carries that around. Nobody. And so what's the purpose? And that's the one thing that just keeps me thinking that this is something. You know, I go back and forth, and I grapple it, and then I'm like, you know what, this isn't right, this isn't right, this isn't right. And everybody knows it's not right. Everyone knows Raven knows it's not right.
It's not right for anyone. I mean, and when you have an underage girl, which she was at the time you found the vehicle, and you found a used condom in the vehicle with all of her stuff in there, plus stuff from another victim that we know was her stuff, it's like, well, why wouldn't you want to process the vehicle? You know, obviously someone had sex with somebody, and there's a used condom in an underage girl's car. It just makes no sense to me. No sense whatsoever. But we continue to push on. Like I mentioned in the intro with Toby, if this was my niece or my sister or my daughter, we would continue, because right now we're not confident enough to say that, in fact, your daughter is okay. And we're not going to quit on you. Most of the public won't quit on you. Your family won't quit on you. So, Raven, if you're listening to us, we're not quitting until you can convince us you're A-OK and your parents see it for themselves. We'd like to thank everyone. Mark, any final words?
No, I just want to tell Raven that I love her so much, and I miss her so much. We're desperate to hear from her again.
And we would do anything.
And we would do anything that we could to help her.
Lynn, any message for Raven?
I love you, honey, and I would do anything for you. Please, please find a way to get in touch with us, any of us.
Let us get in touch with you. That'd be great.
Email your family. Send tips at nwcave.org if you have any other information on Raven. Tanya or Henry, any final words to Raven directly?
You know we all love you, and we're not going to stop until we know you're safe. And you're, like I said earlier, just come home for 2 days. Give your family some peace if you truly are safe, and we'll send you back. We'll send you back via plane, via bus. We'll even send you with money. We'll do what we need to do. We just need to know you're safe because we are hurting and we are afraid you are too.
Well, thank you, everyone. And with that, follow us at www.ravenfurlong.org to find the updates. If you have any of the previous flyers, feel free and delete those. We will be updating the flyer with some information, and we are also going to continue updating the Raven Furlong website, and any media that would like to inquire about meeting with the parents, family members, what have you, please email press@nwcave.org directly, and we'll arrange that for the family. Again, we're going to close this tonight's show with Missing Child by Emil. And he was a great kid that made this song a few years ago. So thank you for joining us.
Can anybody out there hear my voice? Does anybody out there really care for a missing child? I'm a stranger in a strange place, and I don't know how I got here. I'm so far away from home. I would run, but I'm afraid to, 'cause I don't know what would happen. Could I make it all alone? If I could get someone's attention, one kind soul to look my way, maybe you would recognize me from the picture.